Wes Durham, ESPN, ACC Network, joining us now on the Heister Automotive Group Hotline. Wes, what's going on, man?
How you guys? Good to hear from you. How you been?
Good hearing from you, man. It was fun to catch up at ACC Kickoff. And I wanted to bring you on today because Vin Scully passed away yesterday, age 94. His last broadcast as part of the Dodgers play-by-play was in 2016, and he gave a wonderful farewell. But the reason why I wanted to bring you on to talk about Vin Scully is twofold. One, your own personal story with Vin Scully and a letter that he had sent to your dad, but also the art of play-by-play and how Vin Scully had done this for so long, like 7 decades of doing this. And a lot of people want to model themselves after Vin Scully, but he was the only one able to do it. So, like, just in terms of play-by-play guy to play-by-play guy, you know, where was Vin Scully?
Good heavens. He's in the pantheon. I mean, if there's a Mount Rushmore of this industry, he's on it. I mean, he's clearly on it. Because I think he had a gift of a couple of things. One, he had a terrific command of the English language, okay? And you can have a command of the language, and you can have depth in your command. And, you know, one of the things I think as you get into this industry, you respect about guys is, number one, if they have the ability to find the right word at the right time. So he had that, number one. Number two, he also understood the art of timing as it related to the game. And you can go back and today, you know, it's kind of been social media has just kind of been this museum of Scully calls.
Oh, yes.
I mean, most people don't even remember that he was on the call of the catch between the 49ers and Cowboys until today, right? You get to hear the Kirk Gibson call. To me, the black and white version of the Sandy Koufax perfect game where he gives the time, you know, in the game. I mean, he's calling the game, but he's giving you the time. He's bringing you essentially, you know, everybody says when you do radio, you're painting the mind's picture, right? That's the beauty of the craft of radio play-by-play. And he was the absolute best at painting that kind of picture. You could ride along and listen to him, and he would paint the picture for you verbally. And you felt like as you rode along in a car listening to him or sat in your house, I guess, I mean, you would be put in the place of the fan attending the game or, you know, whatever, maybe even the player if he was doing his job at a really high level. So I think that and the timing aspect of the things that in the industry that, you know, I'm blessed to work in, those are the two things about him that stand out most to me. It's a sad day, but I had heard about 6 months ago that he was not doing great from the health perspective. And, you know, I didn't know it was imminent by any stretch of the imagination, although apparently with the way some of the things were put out by the Dodgers, they did. So, you know, good for them and good for us to be able to remember such a wonderful man, let alone a hell of an announcer.
Wes Durham, ACC Network, joining us here on the OG. And Wes, of course, is sponsored by J.E. Womble & Sons. If J.E. Womble & Sons don't have it, you don't need it. Let's stay on Vin Scully here just for one more thought here, Wes. How much of a broadcast can you actually script as
very
a play-by-play
little.
Guy?
I mean, very little. You can prep the names and you can prep the, you know, the lineups and you can have a grasp of strategy and you can have a grasp of what majority opinion think may happen. But once the game starts, it's, you know, it's up to them. And I mean, I've only got to take you guys back to March to, you know, Debbie Antonelli and Mark Packer and I sat in a production call on a Wednesday for the Saturday night final Coach K home game, where we went through an hour and 10 minute call of all these things they wanted us to do to talk about Duke and Coach K. And at the end, this is going to make some people mad, but I don't care at this point. I said, by the way, what happens when Carolina wins the game? And the producer and somebody else on the call went, what do you mean?
What are you talking about?
I said, what happens when Carolina wins the game? And Packer said, he's got a point. And the guy said, well, okay, well, we'll adjust. And
yeah.
I said, guys, I'm just going to say this. And I said, look, I'm not trying to be the know-it-all on the call here. And Debbie started talking, and Debbie said, yeah, but you know what's going to happen. I said, I know exactly what's going to happen. I mean, I've seen this game too many times.
Yeah.
And so, Joe, that's how you get in trouble when you try and script something.
Right.
So anybody who's worth their salt doing games is never going to try and script it.
I'm wondering if you'll indulge us here for one clip. And Victoria, it's from the 86 World Series. It's the one that starts, if a picture is worth 1,000 words. And I just want to set the table here for you. This is the 86 World Series. The Mets are, like, dead in this game so many different times. I just so happened to watch this game last week. And what was unbelievable about his performance in this moment, not only was this at-bat that Mookie Wilson had, like 20-something pitches. It was ridiculous.
Yeah.
The great moment happens, and then he...
Bob Stanley, by the way, threw the moment you're going to play this.
I know. The ball goes through Buckner's legs. He doesn't say anything for... It was almost 2 minutes, all right? Because
correct.
The crowd at Shea is just going bonkers. And it's one thing to let a moment breathe. It's another to compose yourself and your thoughts on the fly and come up with this.
If one picture is worth 1,000 words, you have seen about 1,000,000 words. But more than that, you have seen an absolutely bizarre finish to Game 6 of the 1986 World Series. The Mets are not only alive, they are well, and they will play the Red Sox in Game 7 tomorrow.
In 1,000,000 years, could you ever dream that you'd be good enough to come up with that?
No, but what you do, and you know, since you talk about the game, his prose, again, that goes back to the command of the language.
Yeah.
You know, some people like Mike Emmerich, who I think is also on the Mount Rushmore of announcers, who had a marvelous career, most notably in the National Hockey League. Mike Emmerich came up with 50 different ways to say the word pass, okay? And in hockey, that's ingenious to do that.
Right.
Because you think about the puck being moved around the ice, you better come up with something other than pass. I mean, or else you're going to sound like a one-word, you know, traffic light. But I think Scully's ability to give you the prose right there shows his command of the language.
Western.
I mean, to come up with that thought just kind of extends him to a different level than everybody else.
Wes Durham, ACC Network, ESPN, joining us here on the OG alongside Joe Giglio. I'm Joe Ovies. Vin Scully passed away at the age of 94 yesterday. And today's been a day where, as you mentioned, Wes, people have been posting their favorite clips on social media and everything else. One that I unearthed and played earlier is that, you know, as a general broadcast rule, it's probably best to never invoke the name Hitler. And yet Vin Scully can, and it works because he's so damn good at what he does. It's play-by-play, like I say this lovingly, and I've told this to you before. Play-by-play guys are a different breed. I'll remember at an NSMA event a few years ago. This was before the pandemic. I sat in on a play-by-play guy roundtable, and I think Doc Emmerich was actually one of the featured speakers too. And you all brought, you know, people brought their play chart, their call charts. They were like, how do you? There was a conversation on how you remember things on the fly and everything else. Do people quite understand the amount of prep work that goes into making it sound like it's just all on the fly?
I think when people dig down and I give them the analogy, it's an open book test every time the game is played.
Mm-hmm.
I think people can grasp it in a general sense. But like, for instance, this morning when you texted me, I was standing at training camp at Flowery Branch trying to remember that number 25 is Cornell Armstrong, a reserve in the secondary. And, you know, 44 is Troy Anderson, who's the new linebacker, and so on and so forth. Right,
right, right. Right.
So when they make tackles a week from Friday night in Detroit in the fourth quarter, when probably only their parents are listening, you know, you...
Well, and gamblers, thank you.
Yeah, don't forget.
You're a gambler or a whack job who's got money.
Hey,
Giglio.
Hey.
Sorry, Giglio.
Careful.
I think that you invest yourself in the process, and it's unique into itself. And I'll be the first to tell you, I mean, you know, you guys know me well enough to know that I do care about the color on the card and do care that it be highlighted in certain... I mean, we're all, you know, trapped in our own idiosyncrasies when it comes to preparation.
Yes.
And everybody's preparation may be similar in structure, but the details of it can be very, very different. And so I don't think the general fan appreciates it. And then you have the two arts, and when your ability to cover both bases comes into play, you know, in radio, I think I told you this, Joe, that my radio concern was four people, me, my analyst, my engineer, and my scoreboard guy, right?
Yeah.
In television, my concern is two dozen people.
Yeah.
You know, the tape guy, the producer, the director, the camera guy in the end zone, is he going to get the shot that, you know, my analyst, obviously. It's an analyst game on TV. It's a play-by-play guy's game on radio.
And yeah.
I think you got to think of it sometimes like that, too. And there's where Scully, you know, and Giglio, I bet, and when you watch that 86 World Series game last week, the beauty of him doing that game was his analyst was smart enough to shut up at times and just let him go,
yeah.
Right?
Joe Garagiola,
just let him talk about the moment. And then he was smart enough to know the pitchers are going to take you through this. That's why you shut up when the ball rolls through Buckner's legs, you know? Because all you need to see then is the pitchers. It's just like when Gibson hits the home run 2 years later, right, against the A's off Eckersley. I mean, you see the taillights going out of the right field parking lot in Chavez Ravine, and the ball gets in the seat, and Scully shuts up.
West Durham.
You don't have to say anything else.
West Durham, ACC Network, ESPN. Before we say goodbye, Vince Scully wrote a letter, a note to your dad when he retired?
Well, he sent a note. This was actually, the note didn't come in. My dad retired in April of 2011, and the note didn't really surface until about 5 years later. It was after my dad announced that he was, you know, stricken with aphasia.
Mm-hmm.
And I was spending a lot of time with my dad at the time, thanks in part to my work with Raycom and Fox, because they were good enough to send me the games in the Triangle area. And so I happened to be literally at home, and Joe Davis had just gotten the job in L.A. And that spring, I'd taken my dad to lunch. It was kind of a process that, you know, I would pick my dad up at the house and I'd say, "You want to go eat lunch?" "Yep." "Where'd we go?" "We went to Merrick's that day and ate the bacon CLT at Merrick's."
Nice.
Right?
Everybody knows. Of course.
Yeah. So, and when we're at lunch, and my dad's really struggling to communicate at this point, and he said, "Got a note I got to show you." And he didn't say it that fluid. And I said, "Huh." And all he said was, "Scully." And I thought to myself, okay, now he's having some trouble at the time with words and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, like, I said, "Vin Scully?" And he looked at me and goes, "Yep."
Hmm.
And I said, "Wrote you a note?" And he looked at me and said, "Yep." And back then, the shorter the word, the better.
Yeah, yeah.
Typically, if anybody knows my dad, he would have given me the whole drawn-out story. So the interesting part about this note, my dad never found out, at least to the best of my knowledge, my mom and dad never found out who tipped Vin Scully off to write my dad.
Huh, okay.
But it was a note from Vin Scully to my dad, the handwritten note, and I tweeted it last night after I heard the news. And my dad cherished the note to the point that it stayed on his desk in his office at home until the day he died. And I have the note now. But yeah, it's an amazing thing. And it was like, here's my dad who's done everything that all these people thought was so great, you know, and he was terrific. Don't get me wrong. But one of the proudest moments he had in his life was getting a note from a guy who he considered a hero.
That's great. That is a wonderful story. West Durham, ACC Network, ESPN. Hey, man, we appreciate the time. Get back to some Falcons camp. I know we got football. We got football tomorrow. NFL's back. Let's go.
Oh, Hall of Fame, baby.
Yes.
They ought to put flags around their waist and let them play.
Give me the under, please. Thank you.
All right, man.
Are you serious? Are you serious?
I'm so serious.
All right, man. We'll talk to you later.
Obvious, you got a real problem.
No, I don't engage. I don't engage, man. I don't engage. We'll talk.
Give me the under between the Jags and who, the Raiders or something?
Doesn't matter. It's the Hall of Fame game.
They don't score. Nobody scores. They got one good series, and that's the end of it.
You know Trevor Lawrence is not playing.
Under, yes.
Give me the under.
All right. All right, man. We'll talk to you later.
See you guys. Be well.